Greetings and welcome to the start of a special series on the book by Dr. Devin Brown entitled The Christian World of the Hobbit. My name is William O'Flaherty and I'm the executive producer of the series as well as one of the co-hosts. You can find my main work at EssentialCSLewis.com. Sharing hosting duties with me is Serena Higgins, an Inkling scholar who teaches English and writes poetry, among other things. Welcome to the debut show, and thanks for sharing hosting duties with me, Serena.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, take just a moment here to tell where people can find you online and a few things available at your site.
The easiest way to find me is to go to serinahiggins.com, serinahiggins.com, and I have on there many Inklings resources and a link to my blog, which is specifically about the arts and faith.
Now, what would a pair of co-hosts be without a special guest? As mentioned, joining us in this series on The Christian World of the Hobbit is the author himself, Dr. Devin Brown. Welcome back to All About Jack, Devin.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Now, Devin was with me not long ago to discuss the same book, but we only did a very broad overview of it in a single podcast. Today kicks off a chapter-by-chapter look at the Christian world of the Hobbit. So because there are five chapters to the book, this is the first of five shows. Well, Devin, while the just mentioned single interview addressed this, for those who haven't heard and don't otherwise know, take a few moments to explain the connection between C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people know C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, and millions of readers also know the world of Middle-earth through The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. What many people don't know is that without C.S. Lewis, there would have been no Lord of the Rings. Lewis and Tolkien became best friends and gathered a group around them called the Oxford Inklings, a group that read works aloud, critiqued, and refined them. We might have had their works, but maybe not quite so good. So later in life, Tolkien will write about the unpayable debt that he owed Lewis. He said, "For long, he was my only audience, and but for him, I would never have brought The Lord of the Rings to completion." So I think it's fair to argue that without Lewis, there would not have been a Lord of the Rings. Going the other direction, you could almost argue without Tolkien, there might not have been Chronicles of Narnia, not just for the literary encouragement and influence, but another thing many people don't know is that Tolkien was one of the key aspects of Lewis becoming a Christian in his 30s. So I don't know that there would have been a Chronicles of Narnia had that not taken place.
Interesting point. Now, Devin, your book title actually paints the picture very accurately as to the approach you are taking with The Hobbit through the lens of Christianity. But why is such a book needed or helpful?
Yeah, and let me just say, if people are coming, this is the first time people are hearing about my book, The Christian World of The Hobbit. And if they're somewhat skeptical, well, they have a right to be. English types, you know, my colleagues, have a tendency to read into books things that aren't necessarily there and come up with, well, let's just say far-fetched interpretations from time to time. And so, you know, if there's a general public that's skeptical of such approaches, they have a right to be skeptical. If you go to the preface to The Lord of the Rings and preface to the second edition, I think the first edition had been out for a while, Tolkien feels the need to jump in and say, there are people out there who are misinterpreting my work. They think that what? The ring is the atomic bomb, that Sauron is either Hitler or some other dictator there in World War II. And he is very quick to explain that he's not writing that kind of book. And so people have heard, friends of mine who have heard that I'm writing The Christian World of the Hobbit, they want to make sure that I've read that part of the preface. And I go, yes, I actually know Tolkien's stand against allegory. And then they're very quick to say, now, you know, that's really not that kind of a book. And I said, yes, it's not that kind of a book where A equals B. However, I would say Tolkien was not just a Christian, but a very committed Christian, the kind of Christian whose faith really permeated every aspect of his life. And I think it might be quite interesting to look at ways that his faith influenced his fiction. And so the word that I like to use, and I use it with my students at Asbury, is to talk about judicious literary criticism, to make comments that are fair, that aren't outlandish, that are supported, that you don't have to ignore part of the text or ignore what an author says to make them stand up. The kind of comments that will enhance and broaden a text's interpretation rather than narrow it or twist it in some way.
Now, I thought that perhaps as a follow-up to that and in helping to paint the background picture, maybe you could also tell the listeners a little bit about Tolkien's own religious journey. Was he raised a Christian? Did he have a conversion experience like C.S. Lewis? And then what kind of Christian was he? What denomination or tradition was he in?
Yeah, so Tolkien has, there's this spot in The Hobbit where they get to Rivendell and they spend many good days there. And the narrator, Tolkien's narrator, jumps in and says something like, everything's exciting and terrible, it makes an interesting story. When everything's sort of smooth and lovely, there's not much to say. And I think Tolkien has a spiritual journey more like Rivendell than like going under the Misty Mountains. C.S. Lewis, of course, kind of was raised in the Church of Belfast there in Ireland, and then kind of didn't, and then he came back to faith. Whereas Tolkien really was a lifelong Christian. Like most British people at the time, he was sort of born into the Anglican Church. He followed his family, he and his brother's mother, they followed their father to South Africa. The heat was quite unbearable for young Ronald Tolkien, so they came home. Anyway, his father never made it home. He passed away before he could join them. So here's two brothers being raised by a single mom. At some point, when Tolkien was sort of 9 or 10, his mother, Mabel, converted to Roman Catholicism and became very close to the local priest. Her faith took on a really new dimension in her life, and she passed that faith on to both of her sons. So Tolkien, from childhood on, was a very, very committed, very sincere Roman Catholic all through his life. Made a point of attending Mass regularly, raised his family that way, led what I think anyone would call a pious and devout life, maybe a life of quiet devotion rather than C.S. Lewis. He didn't become a spokesman for the faith like his friend Lewis did. He did assist with some of the translation of the New Jerusalem Bible, but I think he tended to downplay that rather than to upplay it.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things is in your book, before you get specifically into The Hobbit, which you do rather quickly, is you build the backdrop by saying that Tolkien was very clearly a Christian. And so that sets the stage to be able to explore in what way does he present his Christian faith within the Hobbit itself. Now, you actually quote some letters where he's actually discussing it. You made allusions to it already, but I wondered if you would go ahead and note some of what he has actually said about the book itself.
Yes, and I think as I'm trying to make the case that, in fact, Tolkien had not just sort of a garden variety faith, but a very deep and vital faith. And then if we look at not only his faith background, but what he had to say about it, there's a couple sort of telling quotes. One quote he told scholar Clyde Kilby, "I'm a Christian, and of course what I write will be from that essential viewpoint." And then in another letter he writes, "I'm a Christian which can be deduced from my stories." And I take those two quotes and I unpack them a bit and say, what does it mean to be for a work to be essentially Christian? Not overtly, not didactically, not in a preachy kind of sense. And then the second comment, that you can deduce his Christian faith from his works. You don't necessarily have to go to his letters, although they help shed some light on it. You don't have to go to his essays like On Fairy Stories to get an idea of what he's doing. You can look at the story itself and find an essential Christianity to them.
You use a lot of words like that throughout your first several chapters. I really like some of these terms that you say his faith is infused, embedded, absorbed, deduced, permeated, implicit, and unstated. And that's a different method, I think, to writing quote-unquote Christian fiction than a lot of Christian fiction writers nowadays, who just sort of overtly have their characters go through conversion experiences. And this method of embodying theology is common with the Inklings and with some of their successors, such as perhaps Madeleine L'Engle or arguably J.K. Rowling, and also some of their predecessors, George MacDonald, J.K. Chesterton. Do you think this way of embodying theology and literature is a larger phenomenon throughout literary history? Are the Inklings capitalizing on a tradition, or do you think this is part of what makes them unique?
That's a very good question. To some extent, what they do has to be called unique. The world had never seen anything like it before. There's been a number of people that they've influenced later, except for somebody like you say, Chesterton or MacDonald, who were both huge influences on Lewis and Tolkien. Yeah, this kind of infusing a worldview into their fiction, Lewis in one of his letters calls smuggling it in. But that almost suggests something duplicitous. And I don't see this thing as duplicit. Matter of fact, I see it as the opposite. It is they had sort of a unified way of looking at the world so that their fiction embodied the worldview they had in reality, and they saw it all as one piece. Earlier we were talking about Tolkien's faith and how it impacted his fiction, but he also wrote a certain kind of fiction, didn't he? These myths that sort of embody these truths and values that are so essential, he believed.
Recently, William, you also interviewed Michael Ward, and you did a series of podcasts on his book, Planet Narnia. So he's talking about C.S. Lewis there, and Michael Ward developed this technical term, Donegality, which he says is the spiritual essence or quiddity of a work of art as intended by the artist and inhabited unconsciously by the reader. This seems very much like what you're saying what Tolkien said, the religious element being absorbed into the story. Do you think this is the same as that Donegality?
Yeah, I think it's very much that same kind of thing. Those kind of words you mentioned, infused, permeate. Tolkien saw his faith not as a separate component, but something that was part of every part of his life and every part of his fiction.
Now, one of the things you even ask in your book itself, and you provide an answer, and that is, does someone need to be a Christian to enjoy this work, The Hobbit?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it, because I don't want to suggest that you can't enjoy it, A, without being a Christian yourself, because what evidence suggests exactly the opposite, or that B, you can't enjoy The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings without my book, and that's certainly not true either. What I would say, though, is that, well, millions of people from all over the world, all different backgrounds, faith-wise and otherwise, have cherished and loved these books for years and years. So don't think that I'm saying that if you don't have a Christian background, you don't get it. But I would say this, people who love Tolkien, I'll just say that, they really love him, right? With kind of a strange passion other people don't understand. And so I try to provide a deeper understanding. I mean, wouldn't you want to know Tolkien's faith background and how it impacted his fiction? My goal is that this kind of understanding will make the enjoyment even greater.
Well, Devin, at the beginning, you touched on the issue of allegory. Tolkien has gone on record about allegory, and you bring out in your book about, even though this book has Christian elements, it's not allegory. Could you talk some more about that?
Yeah, allegory is a term that a lot of people understand in a vague, imprecise way, but it had a very specific meaning for Tolkien and Lewis. And it was the kind of story where a cluster of objects had a literal meaning in the story, but they all had a deeper meaning. And this deeper meaning was the whole point. A classic example is the parable of the sower that a lot of people know. The sower went out to sow some seeds, and some fell on rocky ground, some on good soil, some on among weeds. Well, let's just be honest, that story is not the greatest story we've ever heard. No one ever says, oh, tell me that parable again. But it's the deeper meaning that Jesus was intending the whole time. Well, it's the same thing with any other allegory. It's a literal story that's not that interesting, and its whole point is to point to a second one. Well, The Hobbit doesn't do that, and The Lord of the Rings doesn't do that. A is not supposed to equal B. People try to do that with the Narnia stories, like they want Peter to be the Apostle Peter, and then they think, wait a minute, the Apostle Peter denied Christ. Well, Edmund must be Peter, and the White Witch must be Pontius Pilate. And that sort of thing really doesn't do justice to these stories, and I certainly don't try to do it.
Well, and in fact, one of the other things that you bring out is the fact that, you know, when people think, okay, it's a Christian, there's Christian elements, that means there must be a whole bunch of Christian elements. What are some common things that people say in regards to The Hobbit that you are careful not to, like, look for Christianity under every rock, so to speak?
Yeah, let me just say, back off a bit and say that I think there's two wrong turnings to make in looking at Tolkien's work. One is to completely ignore his faith and the impact it had on his fiction, to ignore the Christian elements that are really there. And of course, the other one is the reverse, to find so-called Christian elements everywhere. Something like the ring, you know, it's a round O, maybe it equals original sin, right? And maybe Smaug is meant to be Lucifer or something like that. Well, yeah, I don't go that direction. I'll just say I've seen those sort of treatments, and they don't interest me very much.
I think you're saying that there's a very sharp difference between a piece of fiction that's written about Christianity versus a piece of fiction that's written about life from the worldview of a Christian.
Yeah, that's a very fine way to say it. Every so often I'll see the word, I'll talk about a piece of fiction that's been Christianized. if that captures it a bit, right?
Right.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have to explore your first chapter in The Christian World of The Hobbit. I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com, where you can find other great interviews and information about C.S. Lewis. Sharing co-hosting duties with me has been Serena Higgins. Thanks for joining me, Serena, and remind the listeners where they can find you online.
They can find me at SerenaHiggins.com.
That's pretty simple there. And, of course, thanks also goes to our guest, Devin Brown, for making himself available for the first of 5 programs examining his book, The Christian World of the Hobbit. So thanks, Devin.
Thank you.
Well, now let's have you close us out, Devin, by giving us a sneak preview of what the next episode is going to address.
Well, if we took a look at how The Hobbit is an essentially Christian story, the next step I would say will be we need to look at the providence that we find in The Hobbit. I call it luck of an unusual kind.